We'll be thinking about courtship and marriage today. Welcome. We have another look into the life and message of Elizabeth Elliot as she called us to live to a higher standard each day, to not be satisfied with just a little empty religion when God wants so much more for us. As our series continues in the coming weeks, we'll hear from family, from friends, from others who were influenced by Elizabeth's life and message. Courtship and marriage are combination topics. We'll also be hearing about what's important to know, one friend saying what's important to know about Elizabeth Elliot, and why the name Gateway to Joy is significant. We have two Gateway to Joy programs usually each time that we get together. Why that name? What does it mean? Well, think about that later. Right now, it's part 15 of The Call to Motherhood, the second look into the subject of the courtship with Walt. And Valerie will be talking about a custom that involves a goat and courtship, about their first date, about walks they took, about waiting on the Lord. And what did Elizabeth think about the age difference between these two? That and more coming up, part 15 of The Call to Motherhood.
While we were talking about this and that at supper time, Walt's father started talking about the African custom of how the two parents decide on a mate for their children. And if the young man's parents have decided on the girl that they want their son to marry, then they take a goat to that family as a gift. And so he said, looking at my mother and me, he said, "So we have a little goat out in the car." And we were shocked. I mean, we tried to be very cool about it.
That was sort of pushing things, didn't we?
We were amazed that he was intimating that things were going to happen because Walt and I, of course, hadn't had any dates yet. But then when he took us home to the dorm, my mother was staying with me in the dorm. He said goodbye to us. He said, "That goat will be coming along pretty soon." And again, we were shocked, and I was excited, you know, that he was thinking that way, but just amazed that he would actually assume that we were going to get together. Our courting was about 4 months. I stayed home that coming fall, the fall of my junior year, because I had gone to summer school, and I was worried that Walt wouldn't want to be living in the house if I were going to be there, too. So we had some kind of exchange of letters there where my mother was telling him when she would be back from a speaking trip and when he could arrive at the house. And I remember writing to him about that, saying that I would be at home and he needn't feel like he ought to live there if he didn't want to. And he told us what day he was arriving. So it was from September, October, November, December, that he decided that he would live in my mother's house. And he lived downstairs in the basement, and I had my usual bedroom that I had in our home. And our dates, first of all, he started asking me to go for a walk with him on Sunday afternoons, and then it became once a week study breaks on a weeknight, and our excuse was to take the dog out for a walk, but our walks became longer and longer. And our first date was a dinner up in Maine. He took me to a restaurant up in Maine on Saturday afternoon. That was real exciting.
Tell us what happened next after these Sunday afternoon walks.
When Walt and I were living in the same house, I was always impressed with his courtesy. He called my mother ma'am because he was from the South, so he'd always been taught to say yes ma'am, no ma'am. And on Sunday after church, my mother always had nice dinners where either we had company or we just did it nicely in the dining room with our formal china and linen and everything. And Walt always helped a lot with getting food on and clearing the table. And so we would wash the dishes together after Sunday afternoon lunch. And that's when we started our walks. And then it was probably one walk we had in November where he told me that he wanted me to know he was getting serious, that this was just not a fly-by-night fun relationship for him, that he really wanted me to know that his intentions were more serious than just a fun relationship. So I was excited to hear that, and being taught by my mother that I shouldn't be aggressive, that I should wait on the Lord, that I should let him take the lead. I just smiled whenever he made comments like that. One comment that seemed like he repeated several times, we would sit by the fire in the evenings toward the end of November, beginning of December, and he would say, maybe 25 or 30 years from now, we might be sitting in front of a fire together. And he always was intimating that someday we'd be married, but it would be a very long way down the road because he was so much older than I and that I wouldn't be interested in marrying him until much later. Because at the time, I was 19 when we were courting, and he was 27. So that was one thing that I had worried about in getting to know him. And I asked my mother one time, what did she think of a relationship where the man was 9 years older than the woman? And she said, well, I'm the wrong person to ask, because she said, my first husband was 1 year younger than I. My second husband was 18 years older than I. And so she said anywhere in between would be just fine.
Seems and to me that I heard once that Walt had the same question. Didn't he come to you, Elizabeth?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he was closing in for the kill at that point, but still had this little doubt in his mind as to whether it was wise for a man to marry a woman 9 years younger. And I think part of the reason that it seemed strange to him was because he had two sisters older than Val, to him were just little kids. And he really thought of Val as being more mature than these two older sisters. But every time he realized what her age was, he had a few doubts.
And yet his attitude was, when I go back to Wheaton, I would definitely want to date around some. And so he always thought I was just being kind to him, to be nice to him. And I couldn't say to him, well, I'm getting serious about you too, because I didn't want to take too much initiative in that. I remember one time him saying, now you go back to Wheaton in January. I was planning to go back for the rest of my junior year, and you date around as much as you can, because he said, I know there are all kinds of All-American football, swimmer types, players that would want to date you. And I remember thinking, how do I say, well, I don't want to date anybody else? Because he said, well, I said, okay, well then, turnabout is fair play, then you go back to the seminary and you should date just as much if you want me to date out at Wheaton. He said, oh no, I've already found the girl that I want to marry. But he hadn't asked me to marry him yet, so I smiled and kept quiet. It was probably only about a week later that he told me that he loved me. That was in December, and then about a week later that he asked me to marry him. So we had also talked about my grandfather's advice to his sons when they were growing up was, don't ever tell a girl that you love her until you are ready to ask her to marry you. And so when he first told me that he was getting serious, then when he told me that he loved me, he said, I know that means a lot more than just how it's taken in the popular sense, I love you. But so I knew that probably the proposal would come to me pretty soon. It was hard to be patient, but I did wait. And December of 1974, when did Daddy die, 74 or 73? 73. Mm-hmm. December of 74 is when he asked me to marry him. And I was determined to finish college before we got married. He had 5 months left in seminary, so we talked about a long engagement. We decided that we would be willing to do that.
This was the middle of your junior year, right? So
right.
You had a year and a half mm-hmm. to finish.
So we were engaged for 17 months, and that summer of my junior year, I went to England. It was a Wheaton in England program, and he had started his first pastorate that summer. So he was in Southwest Louisiana, and during that 17 months, we only saw each other 5 times. And they were quick, short trips, you know, when we got to see each other.
What would you say to young people today that say that you have to do a lot of dating to get to know one another, that you have to be together a lot? That wasn't the case with you, was it?
It wasn't, and it seems to be certain types of people, I don't know whether it's personalities or what it is, but that feel the need to really talk about a lot and talk about everything and get down to everything serious before they've really decided to get married to each other. And it also seems that a lot of couples are talking about marriage and deciding together you know, at the same time. Do I want to marry you, and do you want to marry me? And we'll talk about this and discuss this a lot. And that wasn't the case at all with me. I believed in the old-fashioned way of trusting God that the right man would ask me to marry him at the right time. We didn't have a lot of discussion about it. When Walt would mention this thing maybe 25, 30 years down the road, it was always in a light-hearted way. He was, as we said, he was very warm all the time, but we didn't feel the need to discuss what it would be like when we got married until after, of course, after he'd asked me to marry him.
Elizabeth, what do you say to these young people today that, as Valerie has said, it's like they want to be sure there's a yes, you decide mutually together to get married. Is this right?
I spoke to a large singles group just this past weekend, and one of the things that I tried to emphasize was that I feel that males in America today are unfortunately very irresponsible, many of them, maybe most of them, and that there is a failure of courage in a man when he has to have all the cards on the table, all the woman's cards on the table, before he has the courage to say, "Will you marry me?" Nobody wants to be rejected, but part of what it means to be male and masculine is courage, and the courage to risk rejection. And these were principles that both of my parents instilled in me. It is the man's job to do the wooing and the winning, and he's the one that has to make a decision and take the initiative and take the risk of rejection. So not only are many dates not necessary, I only had two dates with Jim Elliot. One was a Coke in the student center for about an hour, and the next was a missionary meeting in Chicago at Moody Church, and there was no meal before or after. He didn't have any money for that. Not only are dates not necessary, but intimacy of any kind is not necessary. I feel that as soon as you begin getting emotionally intimate, or spiritually intimate, as so many young Christians are doing today, getting very, very involved with Bible study and prayer on a one-to-one basis, very dangerous business. Spiritual intimacy, emotional intimacy, lead almost invariably and inexorably to physical intimacy. And I have files full of letters from earnest Christian kids that say, and somehow or other, we ended up in bed.
Courtship with Walt, The Call to Motherhood, Part 15. Later on, we'll be hearing about the name Gateway to Joy. Is there a special significance to that name? But right now, we hear from a friend of Elizabeth, Suzanne Johnson, as she talks about what's important to know about Elizabeth.
I think what impresses me so much about her is she experienced this horrendous tragedy. And she not only got up and continued to go on and continued to follow and pursue the God who, in following, in going where she believed God had called her, that had led to this tragedy and the loss of the love of her life. So one, she continued to follow even after such devastation, but then two, the forgiveness that she showed. I wish we could all model that heart. That is why she's important. If we could forgive one another in that way today, it would change our world. That's when the kingdom would come and his will would be done.
Suzanne Johnson, a friend of Elizabeth. Well, let's consider part 16 of The Call to Motherhood, and specifically, let's think about marriage. We'll hear about waiting on the Lord. What did Walt and Valerie, before they got married, what did they talk about in preparation for that marriage future that they had? Did Valerie mind if Walt wanted to lead in the marriage? It's The Call to Motherhood, part 16, marriage. We'll once again hear from Jan Anderson Wismer, who was interviewing Valerie in the first of the programs today.
Valerie, when Walt did ask you to marry him and you started to seriously talk about it, was it something that you went into with a plan?
I think we did talk about headship and submission some. I don't remember that we had very many discussions on it. As I said, we only saw each other 5 times, and they were whirlwind weekends, you know, happy times. I remember once we had planned our wedding date, you know, once we had the date set, it was just a matter of asking God to help us wait and trusting Him to give us the strength to do what we were supposed to do. Of course, I had my studies at Wheaton, and he was in the pastorate. I don't remember seeing Walt sin at all until we were married.
It was perfect.
Yeah, I did.
Dream come true.
We didn't even talk about how we would handle finances. We did talk about how we wanted children to be obedient. We wanted to agree on that. And my mother had warned us that the 3 main problems that couples have are either with money, with raising children, or with sex.
In-laws, sex, children, and money.
Sex. And we didn't think we would have any problems. We just seemed to understand one another and how we thought things should be done. But I do remember a breakfast conversation with my mother one time after we'd gotten engaged where she said, you know that you will hurt each other, you will sin against each other. And we looked at each other starry-eyed thinking, oh no, how could we ever get into an argument, you know, it couldn't possibly happen, or how could we ever want to hurt each other. And so, as I said, it wasn't until our honeymoon that I actually saw that there was sin in this man that I had fallen in love with. He saw sin in me, too.
Elizabeth, you gave a special gift to Valerie for her wedding.
Yes, I wrote a book for Val. I believed that she, being a member of a generation that had been seriously confused and fed a lot of garbage by a movement called feminism, that she needed some reminders of some very ancient truths. So I wrote a book about femininity called Let Me Be a Woman. That was my wedding present to Walt and Val. And there is a chapter in there entitled You Marry a Sinner. And that's what Val is testifying to. She had not seen Walt as a sinner in their courting days. Men have a way of covering up all the bad stuff and putting their very best foot forward. And then all of a sudden the hard realities begin to set in very shortly after the wedding, and she realized that not only had she married a sinner, but finally got through to her that he was stuck with a sinner too. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth of in any marriage. If a sinful man and a sinful woman have to live together 365 days a year, there are going to be a lot of occasions for saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me.
Tell me about some of the surprises that you encountered after getting married.
2 main ones I can think of on the honeymoon. We had a 3-week honeymoon, which was wonderful. Walt hadn't had any vacation from the pastorate, so he was able to take 3 weeks off, and we went to St. Thomas of the Virgin Islands in the first week, and then the second 2 weeks we were in Destin, Florida. But the very first day in St. Thomas, we had to go grocery shopping for our breakfast and lunch food. And I was all excited to do this with my husband, and we had shopped for my mother. She'd always given us a list, and we'd go to the grocery store together. We'd had lots of fun doing that, but here we were shopping for our food together for the first time, and it was his money that we were going to spend, and we found out the prices in St. Thomas in the grocery store were just unbelievably high. And so I was asking him as we were going down the aisles, what do you like to eat for breakfast and lunch? And he was saying, I don't want any of this. I don't want to buy anything, because he was getting disgusted with the prices. So I began to get upset because he wasn't helping me out on finding out what we were supposed to buy. And ended up probably buying just cereal and milk, maybe bread and tomatoes. I don't remember what all we bought. But it was the first time that I saw him irritated, I think, because of the prices. And then I had to apologize to him for getting upset that he wasn't telling me what he wanted, you know, thinking that he was going to tell, that we were going to have this perfect relationship of him telling me, and I was happy to get whatever he wanted and fixing whatever he wanted, you know, and he wasn't willing to tell me anything. He's just saying, well, let's not eat. We don't need to eat breakfast and lunch at all. And then the other surprise was the amount of sleep that he needed. I was a morning person, and found out that after we'd fallen asleep and we could sleep 10 or 11 hours, I would wake up and he could sleep another hour or two if I didn't wake him up. And that always amazed me because we didn't have to wake up for anything. So there wasn't any schedule we had to follow. And it was just amazing to me when I'd wake up in the morning and I'd be completely rested and he could still be sleeping. That was a real surprise. We enjoyed reading out loud to each other on the honeymoon. I read him one book, an Elizabeth Gouge book, and it was a novel, a Christian novel. And I remember noticing the difference in how we appreciated the book. It was written by a woman, so I appreciated all the details and the descriptions that she was giving, and he would say, skip that part, let's get on to the adventure.
But you did read My Wedding Present to you,
yes,
didn't
we
you?
Read
you
Let, read Me, be, Let a woman Me Be a Woman together.
And sent me a cablegram, I think it was, from St. Thomas, thanking me for it, which mm-hmm. I thought was wonderful.
And I remember as we read that book, you know, both of us always saying, amen, this is what we believe, this is what we want to do. And that chapter on you're marrying a sinner, of course, was something we had to accept. We had to say, well, yes, I guess this is true, but we don't want to sin against each other. We've never had real bad arguments. So of course, we've had disagreements, but I've been the kind of person that wants to follow and wants to, I think I want to submit, you know, most of the time, and I want my husband to say, this is the way it's going to be, and you know,
as
I want him to make
say,
a
real woman wants to be told what to do.
Uh-huh. And I know in our disagreements, usually I've been the one to just get quiet, and instead of, we don't get into yelling matches, but I would, if I still disagree with him, I would just get quiet, you know, and when I've gotten, quote, mad, you know, it's usually in silence, not mm-hmm. saying anything to him, usually bursting into tears about something later on when it's built up in me and I've thought that I've just had to say something about something that I disagreed with him on.
Where did you begin your married life then, after your honeymoon?
We began in southwest Louisiana in a little town called Franklin. He had three little churches, one in Generette, one in Franklin, and one in Centerville.
That made you a pastor's wife then?
Yeah, right away.
Was that something you looked forward to?
Yes, I had looked forward to it. I was happy to be married, knew that God was leading us there. There was another shock probably in getting to know Cajun people. I had come from New England, and so they were a totally different kind of people. And Walt had told me all through that year that we were engaged, that the year that he had started this pastorate, how wonderful the people were and how hospitable they were. And I assumed that all Southern people were hospitable. So I had high expectations of being in their homes a lot when we got there. And the very first Sunday that we were there, our first Sunday together, one lady in the church who was a very hospitable lady had the whole church over to her house. And the church was about 40 members. And we had lunch there. And I kind of expected from then on for Sunday lunches to be invited to people's homes, and it didn't happen after that at all. And the Lord was teaching me, of course, during that year that I had to be a servant to those people, but I had expectations that they would be serving us a lot because as a bachelor, he had been in their homes all the time, and they'd served him meals all the time, so I assumed they'd be doing that with us together, but they didn't. Once we were married, of course, Walt wanted to stay at home more, and in the evenings, we stayed at home, and I think the people began to resent the fact that he wasn't around, wasn't visiting them as much as he had when he was single. And, of course, I was a New Englander, and to them, you know, Northerners or Yankees were hard to get to know, and the Lord had to really open my eyes to see and accept the fact that I was to be a servant to them, and we started finally inviting people over to our home instead of expecting to be invited. And that was a real joy to find out that we could do that and have fun and enjoy our Sunday afternoons if we had Sunday company. And so I think that was a step in growth.
Did you find that many of the people among the women would come to you for advice often? Or
no,
like
they
that?
Didn't. I did teach a Bible study. I can't imagine what I taught that first year because I wasn't even walking very closely with the Lord in my daily devotions. I knew that I should, but I don't know, I wasted a lot of time that first year. And I taught this Bible study that was kind of ho-hum. Few of the, you know, faithful women to the church came to it. And it wasn't until I read the book A Severe Mercy after I'd had our first son, Severe Mercy and What Happens When Women Pray, two books that really influenced me and made me see that I needed to have that daily walk, the daily devotions that I knew always all along that I had to, should have, but had always had a hard time disciplining myself to have. Those two books also taught me that when I prayed, I should expect God to answer specific prayers, even though, of course, I'd been taught that, but had to come real to me. And the verse that spoke to me, especially when I got serious about devotions, this was when our first child was about 7-8 months old. I began to read the Bible, asking the Lord to teach me and to speak to me through it. And I came to the verse in Jeremiah, says, "Thy words were found, and I did eat them, and thy words became to me the joy and the delight of my life." And it became so true for me. I really began to find nourishment in the scripture, whereas I hadn't that first year. I'd been kept hoping these people in the churches would change from waltz preaching, and we kept hoping that we would get called to the mission field and that the grass was greener over on the mission field than it was right there. And the Lord taught me that I had to be happy where He had put me, and I had to love those people that He had put us with. And so He changed my whole outlook. And I began to love the people and really enjoy the Bible study. And the women began to enjoy praying with one another as we learned how to pray expectantly. And then the Lord moved us about 6 months after that, after my turnaround where I said, "Okay, Lord, I'm happy to be here and I'm going to love these people and try to serve them." He moved us to Laurel, Mississippi.
The Call to Motherhood, that was Jan Anderson Wismer along with Valerie Elliott Shepherd. Hey, before we go, let's think about the name Gateway to Joy. We typically have two Gateway to Joy programs during our time together, but what does the name really signify?
I just want to tell you why I named my program Gateway to Joy. It's simply because I really do believe with all my heart that every experience, if offered to Jesus, can be your gateway to joy. I'm going to say that again. I believe that every experience, if offered to Jesus, can be your gateway to joy. I do believe that God has a purpose in every single thing that He ever allows to happen in our lives. And some of you would challenge me on that. You would say, "Elizabeth Elliott, are you going to tell me that this terrible thing which has happened in my life has something to do with the will of God?" I'm going to say, yes, I'm going to tell you that. Remember, we live in a fallen world. We live in an evil world. We are sinners ourselves. Bad things happen to good people. Good things happen to bad people. But God is still on His throne.
Well, as our time together comes to an end, thanks for letting us come into your home, your office, maybe along with you as you got some exercise or drove across town, wherever we found you. It's always good to have you with us. On behalf of the Elizabeth Elliott Foundation, in cooperation with the Bible Broadcasting Network, let me invite you to check out all the resources at elizabethelliott.org. Those resources include talks, devotionals, videos, and other Gateway to Joy programs that maybe you haven't heard yet. ElizabethElliott.org. Well, until next time, may God remind you each and every day, you are loved with an everlasting love, and underneath are those everlasting arms.